Hello, and welcome to People of the Pod, brought to you by American Jewish Committee. Each week, we take you beyond the headlines to help you understand what they all mean for America, Israel, and the Jewish people. I'm your host, Manya Brashear Pashman.
I told him at the end of the call, listen, Idan, I'm here. I'm with you. I love you. Just protect yourself. Just be safe. And that's it. We hang up. I didn't know I'm not gonna hear from him again.
That's Yael Alexander, the mother of Idan Alexander, one of 8 Americans still held hostage by Hamas inside Gaza. I recently visited the family's home in Tenafly, New Jersey, a small suburban town often dubbed Little Tel Aviv, for its relatively large Israeli population. Throughout the town, there are reminders of the deep connection between its residents, the Jewish state, and its ongoing war with Hamas. A billboard downtown featuring Idan's picture. A weekly walk for the hostages not yet home. A moment of silence at the start of every school day. Signs of support staked in front lawns. As of this recording, on March 7, 2024, it has been 152 days since Yael spoke with her son, Idan. Those days have been a constant whirlwind of meetings, trips, tours, all in an effort to bring him home. Most recently, the family went to Israel for a painful look at where Idan was at the time of that last call. At the State of the Union address in Washington, D.C., Yael and her husband, Adi, will join 15 other relatives of Americans murdered or kidnapped by Hamas as guests of a bipartisan group of members of Congress.
They told us it's going to be a long process, but I didn't imagine, you know. I thought after 4 weeks max, they're going to bring everyone out. And now we 4 months, I don't have words.
Idan Alexander, a 2022 graduate of Tenafly High School, was one of 2 graduates that year who, instead of going straight to college, moved to a kibbutz in Israel and volunteered to serve 2 years defending the nation where his mother and father had been raised and his grandparents still live.
August 2023, Idan came to the U.S. for 4 weeks. He came to visit us, to spend time with his friends from college. Everyone was here in Tenafly, so it was like the best opportunity for him and for them, like after the graduation, to be again. And it was the best vacation ever. I drove him to JFK. I told him, listen, Idan, I really want to come and visit you during the holidays. And I told him, I'm going to come by myself, Sukkot. So please ask your commander and tell him that mom is coming and give you some free time to spend time with me. So October 1st, I came to Israel. He came to pick me up from the airport, and we spent 2 days together.
After 2 days with his mom, 19-year-old Idan asked if he could return to the kibbutz a little early to squeeze in time with his girlfriend before returning to base. He texted with his mother throughout the rest of the week and FaceTimed with her and his grandparents on Friday night, October 6th. He was stationed on the Gaza border.
Friday night, after the kiddush, like in our house, he called me and I told him, listen, Idan, let's do a FaceTime. And he's like, okay. So I'm like looking at him and he's looking so happy and great, telling me that he ate some chicken and rice and it was okay. It was fine. And now he's going to sleep because first thing in the morning on Saturday, he needs to get up to his watch. And I'm like, okay, great. So say bye to grandma, grandpa, and everyone, because we were like sitting, you know, around the table. And it was very cute of him, you know, to change to the FaceTime, because sometimes he doesn't want to do it. But this time he was like, yeah, cool, of course, let's do FaceTime. And that's it. Saturday morning, October 7th, I'm waking up because my dad is open the bedroom door and he's telling me, Yael, you need to wake up. It's alarm outside. It was 6:30-ish in the morning, a.m., and we need to go to a safe place. And first thing that I'm thinking about, oh my God, I need to check what's going on with Idan. So I'm texting him, like, what's going on there? Are you okay? Are you safe? And then he's calling me. It was a few minutes before 7 a.m. And he's telling me, hey, mom, we are getting a lot of bomb here. It's like a war. I'm seeing stuff, terrible stuff. But don't worry, I'm safe. But it felt like all the conversation, he started like also he spoke a little bit English. He was like, sound like he was screaming and full of adrenaline. And I didn't know what he's seeing or what is happening because no one knew, you know. I told him at the end of the call, listen, Idan, I'm here. I'm with you. I love you. Just protect yourself. Just be safe. And that's it. We hang up. I didn't know I'm not gonna hear from him again.
Yael called her husband Adi back in the States. He and Idan's younger brother, Roy, and sister Mika flew to Israel the next day. Still, for days, they remained in the dark, unable to get through to their son's cell phone, unable to get any information.
A lot of bad news, like you're hearing, you know, all around. A lot of people murdered, horrible stories. Like, after a day or two, you start hearing about these horrible stories from this morning of October 7th, and still nothing from Idan. So we went to every forum that it was like, I don't know, it was like one night you don't know what's going on. The day after, you're working with people on the phone that you never met and you just trust them. They're gonna find your kid. Like they had some, you know, I don't know. Everyone was like trying to help you and telling you, go to hospitals. Go and look because there is a lot of anonymous soldiers or people. Go and look for him. So we've been everywhere, like every hospital in Israel. Like we went there and tried to understand where is Idan. On Thursday, someone is calling me from the army. And he's telling me that he's got a message for us. I didn't understand at first. What is this? Like, what kind of message? Like, I'm on the phone 24/7. We couldn't eat, we couldn't sleep, nothing. We're like in a loop, like try to find my son. And then I just cutting myself and I'm like, oh my God, you have a message for us? Yes, yes. Where are you? Like, so we are waiting for them. We wait for 40 minutes, I think. I couldn't breathe. I remember my head down, you know, between my knees, and I'm just trying to breathe and breathe and breathe because I felt I'm going to faint. I didn't know what they want from me. We met them in this discreet room, and then they told us that after they review everything they know that Idan is took hostage by a Hamas terrorist, and they took him to Gaza. He was guarding a kibbutz that a lot of people got murdered. Thank God they didn't touch him. They just took him from there. He was by himself. So it wasn't like a conflict or nothing. Thank God. He was like surrendering and they took him. There's something that we know.
It was devastating news. But at that point in time, the best news that Yael and Adi could have received because it meant there was hope of seeing their son again.
So it's good. And they're looking at me like I'm a crazy person because this is the worst message you can ever get as a parent. My son is my life, like he's my heir, like he's everything for me, you know? But to understand that they took him and he's okay, it was like the world, like wow, 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 wow. Now we can work, like to speak with everyone because he's okay. Okay, he's hostage, but still we have a hope that he will come back home. Mm-hmm. A day after, we had a Zoom with Biden and all the American families. He was really with us, you know. He understand our pain. He could connect to this. He told us, as Americans, we are going to do whatever we can to help you, to get through it, like, whatever we can, we're here and we are going to do it. And it was really comforting. It was like we felt a hug. And he stayed total of hour and a half with the president. It was unbelievable, you know, because we were so confused. We just got a day before the message, so we knew, like, what is the situation with Idan. But a lot of families didn't know what happened to their loved ones. Like, not everyone knew if they murdered, if they took hostage. Still, it was chaos.
152 days later, 8 American hostages remain missing. Idan, Itai Chen, Omer Nutra, Sagi Dekel Chen, Keith Siegel, Hirsch Goldberg Polin, Gad Hagai, and Judith Weinstein. Both Judith and Gad are confirmed dead. Americans Liat Benin Atzili and Avigail Eden have been released. 32 Americans lost their lives on October 7th. Nearly 24 more have lost their lives since.
A few days after I left Israel with the kids, with Mika and Roy, I felt it was very tough to stay in Israel. I wanted to stay, like, I didn't want to leave because I felt that I'm leaving my son behind, you know. It's the worst, really, it's the worst feeling ever. But I said to my husband, listen, it's not healthy here. The alarms, the panic, the worry, it's too much. And they're like in jail in their house, in my parents' house. So it's not healthy. I'm gonna go back home to Jersey and I'm gonna try to have a routine, you know, again, with the schools, with the friends, like with the community. Like I'm trying to, you know, for them because it's not healthy. So my husband spent like, I think, 2 weeks over there without us. I came back. My sister came with me with her kids. And all our friends just was here. Like, you know, I'm still getting food. Like, everyone is taking care of us and so caring and loving, and you feel the hug.
Though Idan's absence is palpable every day, the rhythms of life have not stopped in the Alexander home, though they are frequently interrupted. Mika is waiting to hear from colleges and shopping for shoes to wear to prom. But she's also writing columns about her brother, speaking at rallies and holding down the fort when her parents are away advocating.
It's hard to be 17 and to handle this. And she's doing a lot. After we came back from Israel, there was like a big rally in Times Square, New York, and they asked me to speak. And I couldn't. I was like numb. I couldn't say anything. So I asked Mika at the same day, and she did it. And it was a great speech from the heart. And it was in front of thousands of people. And since then, I'm amazed by her. It seems like this situation, because I'm keeping her also busy, I know that she can handle it. She's feeling like she's helping with the fight to bring Idan home. And this is super important to her.
Meanwhile, in addition to traveling with his mother and marching for his brother, Roy is attending middle school, playing basketball, and preparing for his upcoming bar mitzvah right before Passover. Idan was supposed to come into New Jersey for that milestone.
The first time that I saw Roy put the tefillin on, and I just start crying because he's not a boy, you know, he's looking more and more like Idan, and he's like grown up now. Like, I'm very emotional now when I'm seeing Roy. He's like, he's not my little baby anymore. So it's, and I'm remembering everything that we've been through with Idan, with his bar mitzvah, and how little he was. And it's like, it's very emotional for me now this time, because we are such in pain, but still we are preparing for this Roy celebration, you know, bar mitzvah boy. So it's a lot. It's sad and happy, and you're still trying to be like, okay, you know, for the kids to see you okay, like every day. But it's very hard.
Yael, who baked cakes out of the family's home, and Adi, a diamond wholesaler, are juggling work obligations, meetings with senators and congressmen, travels to Washington and Israel, and media interviews, all focused on bringing their son home.
I don't know what next. Every day, everything is so dynamic. I don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. Like, a day we're here, a day we need to go to D.C. Like, this is the thing now. My husband is going to work, like, maybe 2 days a week now, because he can't. Like, we have the Zoom, we have the meetings. Suddenly this come and this came. Like, I'm not working, obviously. Like, I'm around it all day. All day and all night, you know? You don't want to miss anything.
I feel that everyone is really working. Also the Qataris, also America, also Egyptians. Like, everyone is doing whatever they can to make it happen. And I'm really hoping, like, I'm going to be in Israel next week. I'm really hoping that some kind of miracle, like, now I'm praying a lot. A lot. Like, I'm talking to Idan nonstop the whole day, but I'm also praying, like, actual praying. And I'm just asking for a miracle and just to see him. To hug him, to feel his perfect face, you know, just to be with him, because, yeah.
The Alexander family no longer lives in the house where Idan spent his childhood. They moved a mile away during his sophomore year in high school. Idan never spent much time in his bedroom. He preferred to be in the center of the action, camped out on the sofa downstairs so he could greet anyone who walked through the room. But Yael took me to the room where he slept as a teen. Beside the bed there now is a giant Torah scroll delivered by the local Chabad rabbi, dressed in silver plating and finials that jingle when the scroll is lifted. A prayer shawl is draped over the top.
So you can see we have a Torah here. It's a beautiful Torah, and this is something guarding Idan and is giving him a bless to his return. Every morning I'm coming in here and I'm doing my prayer, and I'm just talking to Idan, like, every morning, and I'm sending him a lot of strength in his heart and his soul, and I'm just here with him. And every night I'm saying, like, good night, Idan, I love you, you know. Can't wait to hold you.
Idan spent most of his young life in Tenafly. A happy-go-lucky guy, champion swimmer for the high school team, and a big fan of the New York Knicks. But he was born in Israel, spoke Hebrew at home, and visited Israel often to see both sets of grandparents. He even celebrated his bar mitzvah there. Yael showed me the photographs in an album she keeps in his room.
Ay, ay, ay. Yes, Idan. You see? What a celebration. Here is everyone.
Still, Yael was surprised when Idan announced his senior year in high school that he wanted to postpone college and try Garin Sabar, a program founded in 1991 for young Jewish adults who want to explore serving as lone soldiers in Israel's defense forces. Idan and 16 other high school graduates, including a classmate in Tenafly, moved to a kibbutz and did 4 months of training before committing to serve in the IDF.
He told us that he wants to do the Garin Sabar. I don't know, I felt proud, you know, because I've done my army, and Adi was in the army, like everyone doing the army in Israel. So this is something that you do for your country, you know. For me, it was a great experience. Like, it was great for me. And I thought also for Idan, because he's doing this for 2 years and 8 months. He's coming back, doing his college. So Idan chose to do this. I was proud. Yeah. I was proud, yeah. I am proud. Not was.
Idan's 20th birthday was on December 29th, 2023. To call attention to his continued captivity, Yael and his brother Roy traveled to Israel and hosted a blowout celebration with live bands and balloons and media coverage.
And it was really important for me to do a celebration for him, like to mark this day. I wanted to everyone in the news, in the radio, everyone will speak just about one thing, about Idan's celebration, because if he's gonna hear something or someone is gonna hear it inside, it's gonna be the world for me. Because for him to understand that his mom is in Israel and also his brother, and we are celebrating his birthday, and
Everyone loves him and miss him so much. It's going to be major.
Yael knows she's not getting all the answers about her son's whereabouts and well-being. Still, she continues to meet with whomever will see her and listen to her pleas to bring Idan home.
I don't think they can give me the answers, but it's important because every meeting that you are opening your family, your trauma, your kid, like it's connecting them to you and they understand it and you're still relevant. And this is something that they're gonna think about it and maybe you're hoping that they will work on it, you know, to make the stand, to connect to us and to do this.
During the pandemic, Yael started baking cakes. She loved being in the kitchen and Idan loved it too. But since he disappeared, she has not baked a single pastry. She has replaced dough with clay, sculpting in a quiet corner of the basement where she can disconnect for just a little while and think about Idan. She showed me one sculpture that started as a balloon but collapsed in the middle.
Now it looks like a heart and there is like a crack in the middle. And I think this is my perfect piece. It's so unperfect and looked like it's not done, but I think it's done. And I can't wait to take it to do bisque and to paint it because this is how I feel right now. Like with the crack in my heart.
Yael has adopted other coping mechanisms too. A chair and a coffee mug full of cigarette ash now occupy a corner of the front porch as she has resumed smoking, which she hasn't done since she herself served in the IDF. She also has tried to create the reality she wants to see.
We bought a new dining table last week. It's a huge one also because I'm waiting to the celebration, like for Idan return home, you know? So I'm telling my husband, listen, don't say a word. I'm doing that because I'm creating something and this is something good. So we need to continue and praying that this is something that's going to happen. We're just holding and hoping, you know, and praying that he's okay, you know, that he's still strong there in heart and in mind, in everything. Just, you know, and I'm all the time I'm praying, please, Idan, please stay strong. Mm-hmm. Don't let it break you. Even if you hear the bombing, you know, people are coming to save you. You're not alone. We are coming.
AJC's State of Antisemitism in America 2023 report found that 24% of current or recent college students say they felt uncomfortable or unsafe at a campus event because they're Jewish. If you missed last week's episode, be sure to listen to my conversation with two Jewish students at Harvard University on how Harvard's administration has made them and other Jewish students feel unwelcome and unsupported, and the very different approaches they've each taken to fix that. This episode is brought to you by AJC. Our producer is Atara Lakritz. Our sound engineer is TK Broderick. You can follow People of the Pod on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and learn more at ajc.org/peopleofthepod. The views and opinions of our guests don't necessarily reflect the positions of AJC. You can reach us at peopleofthepod@ajc.org. And if you appreciated this episode, please share it with friends and family and write a review on Apple Podcasts.